Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program as we bring you programs every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We are also rebroadcast on Sundays at 2 p.m. Pacific Time at a2zen.fm. So if you're interested, lots of different opportunities for you to basically listen to the program, listen to our guests, go to their websites. We are linked to our hosts, our guests' website, and you can go there and check out their information, find out all about them and what they have to offer, how they can assist you and help you, just like we talk with Beth McDonald, and we will again today. We're in the middle of Aries. I'm not sure if we're in the middle. We just started Aries, and we'll find out more about what that's all about. I am not an astronaut. I can't even say it. An aficionado of the astrology signs. There you go. I found another way around that. And so I don't know all of the ins and outs. I mean, according to the Western charts, I am a Cancer. But all I know is that there are times in my life when I've been real crabby. So there you go. This program today is coming to you live. We are live in studio with our guest. And our guest is the author of, actually, I can't really say that you're the author because you're not the first person to have written it, but you have created a new interpretation, if you will, a new twist, according to Bruce McCormick. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's a great pleasure to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Fair assessment to say that it is not, you didn't actually write it, but you've been researching it, all of the myriad translations, similar to the myriad translations of the Bible and other great works. And you've kind of put your own twist on it.
Yes, that's correct. It's there's actually even a lot of debate about who the original author was. Most people now seem to think that Lao Tzu may have written some of it or may have written all of it, but over the years it has been either added to or modified by other people long before I came along, because governments will modify things in order sometimes to fit their own agendas or whatever. And we're actually not sure who the original author was, whether or not what we have is what was originally written.
Yeah.
But it all seems to still be valid today, 2,500 years later, regardless of who wrote it.
I'm also curious, and I'm sure that you've done some research into this as well, as far as how far back the Chinese culture goes.
Oh boy!
I mean, the Tao is only
2,500 years old. Yeah, I know I've read things referring to, you know, to 4,000 years ago, but I'm sure it goes back much further than that. But I really don't know about further than that.
I've heard of the medicine going back 5,000, but that's just what I've heard. I don't have any empirical evidence to back that up. Mm-hmm. All I know is, from what I've heard and the people who have experienced it, it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Just like the Tao does.
And they had no FDA.
Oh, what a shock. Can you imagine?
All right. Well, let's kind of start out. Now it's pronounced Tao Te Ching.
Tao Te Ching.
Tao Te Ching.
Yes.
Tao Te Ching of Lao Tzu. At least that's
Lao Tzu or Lao Tzu. You kind of swallow the Z. Lao Tzu, think, is actually the point. But Lao Tzu is the way most Westerners.
I would want to get his name right if he were here to correct us. Yeah. He would. Yeah. How did you first become introduced to the Tao?
Well, short of the long story, but short, is in 1979, I graduated from college in 72, worked for a few years, and then 79, I said, I always took all these courses and, for college prep and everything, and I decided to just go back to school for a couple years and just take all the courses I'd always wanted to take. So I went back and I took, I signed up basically as a recreation major at CSUN, Cal State University Northridge, and as a rec major, and I took backpacking and mountaineering and theater arts and sign language and Native American studies, and I got my emergency medical technician certificate, a lot of the different things. But I'd always been somewhat interested in philosophy, and so I started looking at actually more Western philosophy, and I don't know, I just wasn't very satisfied with that. Seemed to be more interested in knowledge than in wisdom, and I'm drawing a very distinct division there. Anyway, so I started looking at things, and I've always been very kind of generic and very eclectic in my approach, and Taoism just appealed to me. So long story short, there was a place not too far from my home called the Taoist Institute in North Hollywood, and I started taking courses there, and everything from Kung Fu to Tai Chi and Chinese medicine, and one of the courses I took was on the Tao Te Ching. So I got into that, and somebody told me there were a lot of versions of it. I went down to a bookstore in Los Angeles called the Bodhi Tree, which unfortunately just went out of business at the end of last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they said they may be trying to come back sometime this year, but who knows.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I went there, and I bought like 12 versions of it, and I went through and basically just started compiling my own version, you know, taking things, quite literally copying from some people's. You know, I had no intention of ever publishing. And long story short, over the 30 years, I've read different versions as they've come along, modified my version to make more sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I decided to actually publish the book, because somebody said, oh, this is one of the best ones I've ever read, I said, well, then I had to go back and research and had to make sure I hadn't copied verbatim stuff out of other people's.
Right.
So it took about 8 months or so to polish it.
I'm curious, this person that said that to you, that this is one of the best I'd ever read, how was it better?
Well, some of it is more clear, and I have, quite frankly, made a few additions as well as just trying to interpret what was there. And I've tried to keep the tone of a Chinese text, but keep it to the point where it, you know, it's more, I don't know, understandable, I guess, maybe to a Western kind of mind. So I don't know. It was a labor of love.
Mm-hmm. Now I've been basically there are 81.
81 chapters.
81 chapters.
No chapters longer than one page.
Yeah, and they're all, again, they're very short little chapters. The one that struck me was 24, Avoiding Extremes. I'm going to have you share that one with us in just a moment. I want to let you know we're talking with our guest, who is the author of the current edition of the Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, and it is Bruce McCormick, and he is our guest here in studio, and we're talking about this ancient work. It's been termed as the go with the flow philosophy, as it were, which seems harder and harder to do these days because of things that are happening. And we'll talk a little bit also about how you have seen this help folks you've shared this with in these very unusual times. I mean, there are those who I've talked with who say that the times that we are in are nothing like any other part of human history. That this is so different. I mean, and you don't even have to sit there and start listing the issues that we're talking about. As a totality, it is so different. And that humanity could go in any one of a number of different directions depending upon the choices that it makes. So it would be very interesting to get your feelings on how the Tao can maybe assist in making good choices, that kind of thing. Share with us, if you would, Avoiding the Extremes, chapter 24.
Well, basically, of course, one of the main tenets of the Tao Te Ching is moderation. And so you want to stay in the center. I mean, it was something that Buddha also, you know, subscribe to, is maintaining the center. And so in chapter 24, and I won't read the whole thing, he says, those who seek glory are not true leaders, and those who are self-righteous will not be ignored. Those who boast are proclaiming their own failure, and those who stand on tiptoe are not firmly grounded. And I think that, you know, we have so many extremes. I mean, do I have to say anything about our own federal government and even our state government? My goodness, our county government. The city government. They all seem to be, you know, clinging to these extreme ideas. And as they get further and further apart in their extremities, it becomes more and more difficult to get anything accomplished.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the original language. Did you learn enough to be able to read from and sort of interpret from the original languages? That is a conversation we've had many times with folks, especially when talking about the Bible, that that Hebrew, for example, the 22 letters, each letter carries with it its own legend, mm-hmm. color, numerical, musical tone, etc., vibration, if you will. And you start putting that together with the other characters to make words, you get a whole unique thing. You put that together in sentences and paragraphs and so forth. But when you translate it from Hebrew into any other language, you lose all of that. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your research in the original languages.
Well, I neither speak nor write Chinese, just up front. But there are several, and I happen to appreciate this one by an author named Jonathan Starr, called the Tao Te Ching, the Definitive Edition, because it has a concordance and it has all of the original Chinese characters, and it shows for each Chinese character that's used what are all the possible English, you know, variations that you can include in it. And it also has a very good definitive kind of evaluation of chapter one, which is in itself a, you know, a very important study. But yeah, I went back and I've looked at several, three or four maybe, of the translations, quite literally, from the Chinese to the English. But, you know, I say the translations that, you know, and it's with all due respect to the people who think they have a translation, I don't think it's possible to do a translation of the Tao Te Ching, because ancient Chinese had no sentence structure. There was no nouns, no periods, no, you know, verbs per se. It was just characters. And, you know, if you know in English, you know, if you move a period, two or three words one way or the other, it can totally change things. So it's, from my perspective, once you've got the Chinese characters and what, you know, the 5-10 different meanings you could have to each character, everything after that is an interpretation. And that's why there can be, you know, at the last count, over 200 different interpretations, because everybody tends to look at it a little differently and, you know, interpret things in their own ways.
What did you find out about Lao Tzu, who is at least attributed to being the original author, or at least one of the original authors, aside from, and we can talk a little bit about his actual history, but about why he even wrote it?
Well, there is a wonderful story involved there, in that you know, he had been trying to get his contemporaries to listen to him, to follow his philosophy, and take him seriously. And he finally really got fed up, and so he jumped on his water buffalo and headed off into the Chinese western sunset, quite literally. And he got to the very last guard gate, and the guard at the gate implored him to write down his philosophy, because he'd never written it down before. And so he wrote down the Tao Te Ching just before disappearing forever into the western wilderness. So that's, other than the fact that it is recorded that he was some minor government employee in the Chinese government, we really don't know for sure, you know, how much of it he actually wrote, whether he actually did jump on his water buffalo and head off into the sunset or not.
Was it a 4 or 6-cylinder water buffalo?
Yeah. I don't know.
Interesting story came out of the news today in regards to, for example, Beijing. It's going to take them 20 years to clean up the air, and Beijing apparently has the worst air in the world.
Yeah.
And that's due to the industrialization of China. I'm wondering what impact the Tao has on the Chinese living in the vastness of China these days. Have you had a chance to visit China yet?
No, you know, I haven't. I have not.
Is that a desire of yours?
You know, I actually have very little desire to travel any place. Chapters 80, I believe it is, says something to that effect about
a state of contentment.
That's right. And the ideal state has an abundance of goods beyond possible use. People take death seriously. Though they have horses, carts, and boats, they do not travel far from their birthplace. And I'm a firm believer in that. You know, I've been to Europe a couple times and traveled around, and I'm just as happy watching a National Geographic show on China as I am trying to experience it myself.
Well, there are plenty of travel channels and documentaries on the various parts of the world as well, and we actually enjoy those as well, but we still enjoy traveling, especially to places in Europe like Ireland, which is where we're headed in December. We're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I heard you say that.
Let's talk a little more about, now there are, have you been able to find out why there are 81 and only 81 as opposed to 90 or 60 or, I mean, how that number, is this just where they stop?
That's where they stop. No one has any idea whether there was originally 81 when supposedly Lao Tzu wrote it or whether it was added to later, whether the individual chapters were added to. No one really knows. The earliest known actual record of what we now call the received texts was, I believe, 300 BC or thereabouts, and that it seems to be very close to what we have in the received text, and it had 81 chapters, so that's the most we know.
Bruce McCormick's my guest, and he has his version, if you will. I guess that's a fair way to put it, your version of the Tao.
That's the way I refer to it.
All right, and you have a website as well.
Yes, I do. It's the Tao Te Ching, all one word, with Tao Te Ching spelled Dowdejing. And the TaoTeJing.com.
Did you happen to find the Tao of Pooh?
Oh, that was one of my first introductions to it. And in fact, in the preface, I recommend everyone who's new to the Tao to actually get a copy, first of all, of an old Winnie the Pooh tape, if you haven't watched one, so you kind of reacquaint yourself with the characters.
The voices especially.
The voices especially. And then read The Tao of Pooh, because it clarifies a lot of things, and it's a very entertaining one-night read. And once you've read that, it makes reading The Tao Te Ching, which is also really pretty much a one-night read, as far as your first go-through, it makes it a little more entertaining, a little more enjoyable.
Let me ask you about your philosophy. Now, obviously, the Tao is a major part of your philosophy, but it wasn't always. Where do you come from philosophically and or spiritually?
Well, spiritually, I mean, I'm from a Christian background, but I grew up through middle school in the Christian Science Church, and then I changed to Disciples of Christ. And then in high school, I was with Assembly of God for a while, and then in college, went to Lutheran. And then for a while, I was within the Catholic Church, and then the Presbyterian Church, and then the Episcopalian Church. So, you know, I've been through most.
You've been moving around.
I've been moving around, yeah. And an area, each of them has something to offer. But, you know, I always find most of them sort of limiting in a way. They say, well, we don't believe that. I say, well, I'm not so sure, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, call it being wishy-washy. I don't care what you call it. But that's the one thing I like about the Tao Te Ching is that, you know, number one, it's open to interpretation. But, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's not religious. And I said, well, you know, if you're Christian in place of the Tao, just say God. You know, if you're of the yoke, you can say Allah. You know, it doesn't really matter how you fill it in. The issue is not what you can, you know, what you are in as far as the background is concerned. The important issue is the wisdom that it contains.
What is there a translation for Tao Te Ching?
Well, Tao means a way or a path. Day is virtue. It's the, you know, the inherent goodness in people, and Jing means canon. So, in the long and the short of it, is that the title means the canon of the way and virtue.
Ah, okay. Now, virtue is used quite often in your translation, anyway, or version.
Yes.
in each of the number of the titles.
Yeah, originally the book was divided into two sections, and there are some, again, because the received text is one way and some of the, you know, archaeological evidence is different. But the first 37 chapters, I think it was called the Tao, and the chapters 38 through 81 were called the Jing, or all about, mainly about virtue. And some people actually have written books that put chapters 38 through 81 at the beginning, mm-hmm. because, you know, that's their thing. So that's where it got its name. It's really kind of two books in one.
So let's talk a little bit about the philosophy. And obviously that takes having to also go into each one of those 81 chapters and sort of scrutinize. Do you, I mean, you've already suggested that they pick up, whether it be the Tao of Poo or some translation, and read it through once, you know, in an evening,
right,
because it's easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
After that, do you then choose one a day for 81 days and then start over again? Do you spend time meditating? I mean, what would your suggestion be in that regard?
Well, when people buy the book from my website, and if I ever do a second version, I'll include this in the book, but I also include a list of what might be referred to as sort of generic chapters, which you know, you don't have to get into some of the esoterica of the philosophy. I mean, like chapter 2, I'll just open to it here. All can see beauty as beauty only because there is ugliness. All can know good as good only because there is evil. You know, those type of chapters where you can read them and on the face of it, you say, oh, okay, you know, yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously in a lot of them a lot more underlying meaning. So, you know, you can read this over and over again, and every time you read it, you're going to get something different or you're going to see it a little bit differently. So anyway, long and short of it, I give include a list of those chapters, which are more or less generic, where you can kind of start without getting involved in the esoterica. And it really doesn't matter what order you read them in because they're all standalone chapters. So you can just open to one and read one, or you can read it from 1 to 81 or 81 to 1, so mm-hmm. It doesn't really make a difference.
Which is kind of nice, and again, you can, I know some people will take I've heard of this when I was working for the Christian station, where people would take the Bible and they would just flip it open wherever the page opened up, mm-hmm. and they would put their finger down, and that would be the chapter verse they would read,
right,
and that would be for the day, mm-hmm. and, you know, obviously God must have some meaning in that for me, mm-hmm. and so forth. So you could do the same thing with the Tao.
Absolutely.
Or any other material as well that, mm-hmm. that you're looking for some type of inspiration and support from. Let's talk a little bit about the times in which we live and how the Tao relates today. I mean, it's a 2,500-year-old text. That some would say it's 2,500 years old. What relevance does it have for today?
You know, a lot of people that I've, you know, given the book to or they've bought it, you know, I've been there when they read it, and quite often they start laughing, you know, and I ask them which passage they're laughing about. But invariably the reason they're laughing is because, you know, this thing's 2,500 years old, and we just haven't learned much in 2,500 years because it's still so valid. So I think the validity of it, and I think Buddha said that wisdom is wisdom. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are, or when you are, mm-hmm. is valid here because the wisdom in the book is timeless, and I think it will you know, certainly has a lesson for everyone today.
Is there a relationship between Buddha and the Tao?
Well, there's some discussion more about Confucius, whether or not Confucius and Lao Tzu actually met and discussed philosophies, because there are some, you know, closely related followings or teachings in there. But I don't believe that Buddha and Lao Tzu ever met or discussed or knew of each other, because I believe Buddha was after Lao Tzu, I think, but I can't remember the dates.
I do find it interesting as time goes on, the things that I find out about what's happened in history that I wasn't told when I was going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't as if, well, you were still within 25 years of that event, so we can't really reveal all that. I mean, it wasn't until I moved here to the Central Coast that I found out that the Japanese actually made it to the mainland U.S.,
yeah.
And this was in the 60s and 70s when I was going to school. They never said anything about this to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was always Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Pearl Harbor was the one and only place the Japanese made it to. And
mm-hmm. And
then I come here and I'm thinking, what in the heck were they hiding? You know, I wonder if the same thing is true about some of these philosophical writings and these individuals and their history. I mean, Lao Tzu was just a human being. He was just a guy.
Yeah.
Had the same emotions and characteristics as you and I. What makes him so special that he would have something like this?
Well, again, he was just apparently a thoughtful guy, if in fact, again, he actually wrote it. You know, I think we all have deeper philosophical thoughts quite often, but most of us actually don't take time to even write them down, which he, again, didn't do ostensibly until, last days of his life. But he was just ahead of his time with some of the wisdom, I guess.
Very interesting. We're talking with Bruce McCormick, author of the Tao Te Ching, and we're going to continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay where you are.
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Rupa Chari bring you this health tip.
Today's Chari Center of Health quick tip is for heart health. What is high blood pressure? We need to understand how our body keeps blood flowing through it. Your heart carries blood from your heart to your entire body through a system of arteries, vessels, capillaries, and veins. When your heart beats and blood is pumped into the arteries, the blood actually pushes against the walls of the arteries. A blood pressure reading has two numbers written like a fraction, one number on top and one on the bottom. This reading measures the amount of force in two ways. The top number, or systolic blood pressure, is the pressure in the arteries when the heart muscle is pumping blood. And the bottom number, or diastolic pressure, is the pressure in the arteries when your heart is resting between heartbeats. How do you monitor your blood pressure? Buy a blood pressure monitor from the drugstore. Your blood pressure changes so often throughout the day, it's best to use more than one reading to figure out your average.
What do you need to do before measuring your blood pressure? Don't eat or use caffeine, alcohol, or tobacco products 30 minutes before measuring your blood pressure. Go to the bathroom and empty your bladder. Rest for 3 to 5 minutes and avoid talking. Sit in a comfortable position with your legs and ankles uncrossed and your back supported. And place your left arm raised to the level of your heart on a table or desk and sit still. What is the normal blood pressure as defined by the American Heart Association? Normal blood pressure for adults over 20 years old is a reading lower than 120/80. When your blood pressure rises above 120/80, you're at risk of developing high blood pressure. High blood pressure is a reading higher than 140/90, and low blood pressure is a reading below 90/60. So please monitor your blood pressure and be sure to discuss your readings with your doctor.
Take your health to the next level for the new year. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're here talking with Bruce McCormick. We're also talking with Beth McDonald. We're talking with her. She's from BethMcDonaldConsulting.com, 963-0842, and we're talking about Aries. Now, how far into Aries are we? I mean, I think we're still very early into the phase of this sign, correct?
Very early in the Western astrology. Yes, we are.
Okay. So let's start from, so to speak, the beginning. As far as Aries is concerned, what is the sign? What is its significance and its power, if you will, or influence on us?
That is awesome. That's awesome. Because Aries is the first sign. It is the beginning of the 12-month, 12-sign cycle. It rules the developmental ages of birth to 2 years old. It's a fire sign. It's noted for its kind of innocence and its energy. Think about how energetic small children are. It also rules the divine male archetype. And so when there's a lot of Aries energy, it's more easy to access your male side, to be an innovator, to be bold and fierce when need be. That sort of thing. So if you've got projects and tasks that need to get handled, or even if it's just finishing your income tax, draw on that male archetype.
Mm. Well, this is probably the first year since I've moved here. Our taxes were done either late February or early March. Now we're sitting and waiting.
Yeah, well, that's partially for you because you have goals. you were really clear. You were doing things differently this year, and
yeah.
you have some serious financial goals.
Well,
many of them fun.
Well,
absolutely. You want to take a hot vacation, and so or a cool vacation because
yeah.
you're going to Ireland, and it's not notoriously hot.
Right,
right.
But the other aspect of it too is that the cycle that I had been in, and maybe this is part of changing that cycle, and maybe Aries is part of that change.
Yeah.
As far as an influence. That I was kind of tired of the way things have been going for the last 5 or 6 years as far as that particular element, the taxation.
Yep.
And, okay, I know I'm going to owe, so I'm going to wait until the 15th to file because I know I'm going to owe, and I'll just put it off. And each year that progressed, I said, okay, what do I need to do to prepare for next year? Do I have to have it a little more withheld, a little more, and so forth and so on? And so I finally, this is sort of the watershed year, I think.
Yep. Aries has a magical way of stripping away everything that's not strictly necessary for the achievement of your goal. And it's sick and tired of being sick and tired. Mm-hmm. It rules the innovator, the pioneer, trying things differently, trying something different.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be more impulsive than, well thought out, but still, sometimes that's what you have to do to break a pattern.
I know, Bruce, that Greg Braden has spoken of making new choices,
we've
never made before.
Yep.
Even though the circumstances, the challenges are the same, it's time to say, okay, now I used to be able to use this analogy that people are putting a videotape in the videotape machine and watching it, hoping for a different ending
to the movie.
I can't do that anymore because Now people are doing DVDs and there are alternate endings.
Yeah.
So I've got to come up with a new analogy. But nonetheless, the point is that if you've been doing the same thing every time the challenge arises, do something different this time.
Right.
I mean, honestly,
right.
I joke with people about this. I've been talking with somebody who was sharing with me their philosophy about elections and saying, if everybody didn't go out and vote this year, the news media would have nothing to report. And boy, would they be perplexed. Or they would start throwing numbers up on the wall and the public would say, how can you have numbers? We didn't give you any. It would be different. I'm just saying it's totally different scenario than anybody would expect. How could it be any worse than doing the same thing over and over and over again?
Aries is very much about making new choices.
Yeah. Well, that's what we want to do. Next week, we're going to talk more about Aries. Roughly, how long are these signs?
About 30 days.
Okay, about 30 days.
According to the Gregorian calendar that we use, they're about 30 days.
But they aren't always within the 1st through the 30th. Sometimes they start the 3rd or 5th of the month. I mean,
this is kind of weird. It usually starts about 3/4 of the way through the month.
Mm-hmm.
The way we measure time is different now than it used to be. And so by our Gregorian calendar, these shifts from sign to sign happen usually around the 20th,
mm-hmm.
Although it can be as early as the 19th and as late as the 23rd.
And that was something else that you mentioned, too. We
right.
just went through the
spring equinox.
Spring equinox, thank you.
And that was early this year.
Yeah,
that was early this year.
It's very
yeah.
interesting.
And at some point, I will learn all the science behind that, but I am not the expert on that. Not today.
I'd like to have us try something new, and that is, either stay on or stay off of daylight saving time. I would like to see what it would be like to go through the winter either in it or go through the summer out of it.
You know, I think you should write your congressman.
I mean, my understanding was that it was done way back when for businesses so they could stay open later and continue to conduct commerce. But because we're a global society and most of it's done on the internet, it doesn't matter where the sun is anymore.
That's an interesting proposition.
Yeah. Well, anyway, musings are musings.
Yes.
And Beth McDonald Consulting is at BethMcDonaldConsulting.com and 963-0842. And Beth, we'll talk to you next week more about Aries.
Awesome. Thanks, Richard.
Until next week, this is Richard Dugan. We'll be back with Bruce McCormick in just a moment.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
Till I got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close.
Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804. Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804. Professional glassblower and craftsman Saul Alcaraz of Santa Barbara Art Glass can design and create a custom piece for you, your home, or your business. And here's all you need to do.
All I need to know is the colors of your house. I'll take it from there. I can make your salad bowl, your plates, your drinking glasses, your wine glasses, your pitcher, cups, and a chandelier to finish it up. And they will look really beautiful on your table. And obviously, we gotta have the right sizes. Send me the metalwork, the hardware, where it's gonna sit. I mean, I have dedicated thousands and thousands of hours. I've been playing with the glass for 21 years. I specialize in antiques. That's my forte.
Can people come by the shop unexpected?
I like it when they come in unexpected, and they'll probably bring some good energy in. Our studio, it's at 706 East Mason Street, two blocks from Miltos in Santa Barbara.
How do people get a hold of you?
Check out my website, sbrglass.com, or call us at 805-965-1541.
Tell me your stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. My guest is Bruce McCormick, author of The Tao Te Ching, and we're talking about the ancient Chinese philosophy that has basically, in one sense, Bruce, I don't know of anybody, I'm sure there are some, who haven't heard of the Tao in some shape or form or color, if you will, that somehow its influence, just as there will be those who will also say, and I think rightly so, that even the Bible and the Quran and other great writings down through history, what I call ancient wisdom teachings, have influenced our lives.
Well, certainly so, and you may never have heard of the Tao Te Ching per se, but you've certainly heard of Kung Fu and Feng Shui and Tai Chi, and you may have heard of things like Qigong and some other things. But the issue is that even the sayings, you've heard, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, or under your feet, depending on how you choose to interpret it. And that is, again, a direct quote out of the Tao. So you may not know it exactly, but you've certainly heard pieces of it or are familiar with derivations from it.
I was just thinking about the timelines of the various civilizations down through history. I wish that my history classes had done that, had laid out the various cultures that have existed that they wanted to focus on, whether it was ancient China or Africa or Europe or Ireland or Britain or Southeast Asia and so on and so forth, and even the Americas, North, Central, South, and started laying that stuff out so that we could better understand where different peoples came along in those cultures, maybe together at the same time.
Yeah, actually, my ex had a huge chart. She was a teacher, and she had a huge chart in her classroom that actually showed that. It showed, you know, different civilizations. It was a timeline chart, and it showed, you know, various civilizations going across the chart at, you know, various times. So you could see, well, what was going on in England at the same time this was going on in China or whatever else. So, yeah, that type of thing is very interesting to go back and look and see, you know.
And I'll bet you there are some parallels in those the different civilizations at that time, that similar kinds of things were probably happening.
Yeah,
the whole hundredth monkey concept. If that's right.
Yes, they were.
Now there's an aspect to Chinese philosophy, and that's the yin and the yang, the positive, the negative, the male, the female. I mean, we can go on down the list of the opposites that exist.
Right.
And I've sort of raised this question, and I'll have you elaborate more on it. That if we came from the one, the all, where there is no opposite. There is no comparative attribute. It's just the one.
That's right.
All that is all. Yeah. And then we came to this place where there is dualism. There is this, the separation, the left, the right, and so on and so forth. And now all of these ancient wisdom teachings are telling us where we're going is, guess where? Back to the one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm confused as to why we need to do this contrast and compare life existence in the first place. What were we missing? Does the Tao shed any light on what we were missing that we needed to have this, or is it specifically designed for in this life?
Well, a couple things. First of all, you're right. The one we talk about, you know, is the sort of where everything came from, regardless of what you choose to call that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was what isn't, or there was nothing, right. And then there was something. So even in there being nothing, there was something. So even
true, yeah.
Going back, there is dualism even with, you know, with starting with something, because you had something and you had nothing. So when you talk about yin and yang, well, first of all, it's I think important to mention that that Taoism is really the first, and as far as I know, the only major philosophy which stresses more female values, and that is the better known, if you're looking at the yin and yang symbol, the darker side of the thing. It's the shade, it's the darkness, it's the subtleness, and the light side, the white side, normally speaking, in a black and white, you know, yin and yang symbol, is more the male side. It's the brightness, it's the energy, it's the, you know, and Taoist philosophy would have you, you know, be more laid back, be a little less assertive, be more, you know, accepting of things. And those are things which, for better or worse, we generally associate with more female-type values. And just as a side note, too, for those who don't know it, if you look at the yin and yang symbol, in the dark side, there is a little speck of light, or a little bit of the white side, and then the light side, or the white side of the yin yang symbol, there is a little dark speck, and those represent the fact that within each thing there is the seed of its opposite. So, you know, it's a constantly revolving symbol, if you get into the whole history of it. And within each thing, within each good person, there's some bad, and within each bad person, there's some good. And, you know, of course, it goes on and on. It's the whole dualism thing.
I heard someone observe of political persuasions and talk radio that those who are railing against the other side owe the other side a debt of gratitude for their existence, mm-hmm. because if it weren't for the group that exists, that they're railing against, they'd have nothing to talk about.
Gee, what a shame. We wouldn't be able to listen to all these guys. What a horrible, I can't even imagine what a horrible thing.
But again, it goes back to that point that there is still also that seed of the other in them. And so in a way, when you start to criticize them, whoever them is, mm-hmm. non-political, could be religious, could be economic, whatever, you're criticizing yourself too.
Yeah, in a sense, certainly. Yeah. And it's important to remember that it's dualism, but it's not necessarily opposites.
Right.
It's more like
compare and contrast?
Compare and contrast. It's more cooperative. It's more interdependent.
Okay.
Than it is.
They need
opposites.
Each other.
They need each other. They exist together. And
there's a song that just flashed through my mind, and the name of the song I don't recall, by John Denver. But one of the lines in it. It just like the ocean needs the land,
mm-hmm.
and so forth and so on. So, yeah, it is true that those compare and contrasts or opposites require each other to exist. And that's an interesting dichotomy that even certain philosophies or religions have difficulty with, because somehow in some philosophies or belief systems, you must defeat your opposite.
Exactly.
Well, but if you defeat your opposite, now you have nothing to do.
That's right.
So
what are we going to do if we defeat these supposed bad guys that we're fighting, then what do we do?
Yeah. So interesting scenario. I mean, I've even thought about that. It's like you hear about these various conflicts around the world, whether it be the Palestinians and the Israelis, or Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, the Brits and so forth, or any other group of people who are struggling back and forth amongst themselves based upon whatever they choose to base it on. Okay, let's just say we resolve this. Now what are you going to do? You don't have anything to fight over. You've resolved the issue now. And I'm not saying keep fighting so because you can't figure out what you're going to do after. It's like, why don't you think about that?
Well, again, going back to the book, in chapter 57, we say religions are espoused to make people more tolerant, but yet the more religion there is, the more intolerance and prejudice there is. And, you know, do we need to go any further than, you know, than the Muslim fundamentalist that, you know, and tolerance versus acceptance. And I think it's very important that we get to a point of acceptance as opposed to tolerance.
Yeah. Again, that interdependent relationship is, again, it all seems to be somewhat of a dichotomy, a catch-22, if you will, because, again, we're all in this together. We all have differences. And somehow, some way, we have to find a way to understand those differences. And the importance, the significance, not what's bad about them, why we need to get rid of them. This is the reason why we have to get rid of them. Not just because they're different.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. That's illogical to me.
Well, but that's what governments have always done. No. When they want to defeat, they, you know, look at the propaganda films from World War II, and
yeah,
the Japanese are all these horrible guys, and, you know, 99% of the Japanese just wanted to be left alone, just like we want to be left alone.
Yeah.
You know? But
by the way, speaking of which, I just produced a program on that, dealing with a particular exhibit having to do with the Gaviota Coast and Central Coast, and of course that incident or incidents,
with the submarine, yeah,
right? I managed to pull up some audio from Tokyo Rose. And I was listening to some of this. I don't know if, because I didn't hear all of the recordings, but these little bits and pieces, I didn't hear any vulgarity. I didn't hear any curse words. It was more the words that were used to undermine the mental stability of the troops or the public or what have you. But they didn't use raw language, if you will.
Well,
I thought that was interesting.
I think they were trying to counter all the negative language that we were using in all of our, you know, propaganda stuff. In other words, they're all bonsai, you know, uh-huh, die Yankee dog and whatever else,
right,
you know. But by putting on, her very more or less soft kind of pleasing voice, and, you know, you should all lay down your arms, and, you know, it was counteracting our own propaganda, I think.
And obviously, vulgarity would not have served their purpose.
No, yeah. They didn't want us to see them as being vulgar because, you know, they were trying to show how civilized they were. So.
What about the transformation of China? And again, this is still in light of the Tao, and how it has changed. I mean, it's still technically a communist country, but the trappings are blatantly capitalistic.
Yeah.
It's like somehow I've never heard of those two meshing together real well. At least that's not what I was taught. They don't work real well together.
Well, it'll be interesting if it happens in the future, because certainly, you know, now the people are starting to say, hey, you know, this money thing, this is pretty good. This, you know, this working on the old commune for, you know, whatever I can eat for a week is, you know, not necessarily the best way to go. So as soon as human interest gets involved, people start thinking, you know, differently about their own living arrangements and what's going on, and why the people above them are trying to, you know, limit their access to things that the people at the top are, you know, obviously have. So it'll be where it's going. Your guess is as good as mine. But when people start seeing that things could be better, things generally change.
Would that maybe be addressing the one chapter on avoiding extremes?
Well, it could. It might exacerbate the problem, though, because people are going to, you know, because the government is not going to give up easily, and so you're going to see possibly what we saw in the Arab Spring with uprisings and things like that, which certainly comes to extremes.
Yeah.
But
of course, they did have Tiananmen Square back in the 90s.
They certainly did.
Which was really astounding. What an incredible event that was.
Well, and I still see the picture of that one guy standing
in front of the tank.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's incredible. Yeah.
You know,
incredible.
And was willing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've that is one of the most significant, I would say, representations or symbols of a people who has basically said, you know what? We've had enough. And you know what? It would be preferable to die than to continue to live in this lifeless arrangement.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's very true, and the Tao even has something to say about that, and I won't read anymore, but I think that, you know, people get to the point where they, and especially now, of course, we didn't even talk about the internet, but that's one of the biggest things that, you know, everybody has access to one way or the other. Governments keep trying to squelch it, but even our own government, you know, has been trying to get a law passed that gives them an on-off switch for the internet, if you can believe that. So, you know, we're going to have to be careful even here in the United States for that.
Yeah, that's true. Who is Bruce McCormick?
Who's Bruce McCormick? I think I'm an unpretentious stone rolling around along the stream bottom, and hopefully that's wearing off some of my rough edges.
I like that. I can see that. And what do you hope to or want to achieve through the work you're doing?
Well, as far as the book's concerned, I always had two goals. One was, number one, clear my upfront costs. And number two was to hope that, you know, or feel that at least 10 people got something meaningful out of the book. So I'm still working on both of those. My other work is with, generally speaking, with, special needs kids, and that's very, very fulfilling work that I do with them.
Give us your website again.
It is the Tao Te Ching, spelled Daodejing, all one word, thetaodejing.com.
Do you have a favorite chapter?
You know, I have two or three. Probably 50 is one, and 11 might be one. And maybe 57, the one I was just reading from a second ago.
50 has to do with the value of life.
Mm-hmm.
What was that other number? 11.
11. Yeah, that's the value of emptiness.
Ah, okay. You have them memorized.
Yeah.
Which is always nice. And how long did it take you I guess actually you told us at the front end of the program that this was something that you were compiling just for yourself, and then...
Right. And then
boom.
It was just over a year ago when this friend of mine was reading it, and it took me the better part of 8 months. I know every single person working at the Coffee Beans, both in Ventura and in Carpinteria, by name, just because I spent so much time there, because I was, you know, researching, and basically I went through it, you know, a word at a time to make sure, well, this word is used differently in this chapter, and so, it took 7 or 8 months of polishing before I was confident that that I had something worth putting out.
Well, I'm glad you did. I've learned something from it, just having had an opportunity to flip through different chapters. I like it, too, because for me, I could sit down in an evening and read it. It's not overly text material. I have trouble going through. I always get afraid to pick up. I'll wait for the, maybe there is an audiobook out on War and Peace. I've never read it. I've never read Ulysses. A lot of the great classics, and one of these days I will, except that usually when you do that, you retire, and I have no plans on retiring, so I don't know how that's going to happen. But nonetheless, I'm glad that it's short chapters. It makes it easy. I can get to chapter 10 in maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Just one other thing to mention, too, is a little bit different about mine, but each chapter has a page next to it for your thoughts.
Yeah.
So, because whenever I'm reading a book, you know, I always write in margins and scribble the what fors and whys and stuff, and so I included a page for everybody to include their own thoughts or, you know, Bruce is full of baloney or whatever.
Yeah. And you have an email address that is associated with your website.
Yes, bruce@thetaodejing.com.
And let's do this. For the first two people who email you, letting you know that they heard you on this program, tell me your story, you'll get them a copy of the book.
Right. And also included in that will be, if you have a favorite chapter, I also print those on a very nice 65-pound parchment paper.
Oh, nice.
And happy to include your favorite chapter if you have one. If you read the book and then get back to me, I'll be happy to print it out.
And then
you.
They could go out and have that framed. That would look really nice.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much again for having me.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Again, my guest, Bruce McCormick, the Tao Te Ching. And this has been Tell Me Your Story. We'll be here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we archive the programs at the radio show's page. Until next week, love to Lal.